Chapter 50. Shinri, 9. In the end, after all of her waiting in the darkness, shamed by her fears, Avan never came to her bedchamber. Instead, he summoned her to his. It makes sense, Shinri thought ruefully, as her handmaidens quickly prepared her tala and hair. Why did I assume that he would go through the inconvenience of actually coming to my room? She stood stiffly as her women worked, surprised at her own fatalistic resolve. Not that she wasn't afraid. In fact, her heart beat with an almost buzzing intensity, and she could feel the sweat gathering on her brow and at the base of her neck. Outside the window, the evening darkness bespoke an ominous hour. He had finally ordered her to his bedchamber. She hadn't escaped, after all. She'd had chances to attempt an escape. Not very good ones, admittedly, but opportunities nonetheless. Times when she could have ducked into an alley in the city or run from her pursuers, hoping to be lost in the crowd. Each one had seemed too dangerous, however. She saw the haunted fear in the eyes of the city men. All of the guards and soldiers had been mercilessly executed. Those who remained understood the monster that ruled Ral Aram, and she doubted they would help to hide her from his searchings. In addition, Shinri had never lived outside of noble accommodations. She suspected she would have nearly as difficult a time surviving on the city streets as she would in the wilderness. "Wait for a better opportunity," she had told herself. "You need to try and escape through the Oath Gates. Seek refuge with a foreign power, someone who can protect you." Unfortunately, there seemed to be few places of refuge remaining in the world. Alethkar invaded, Ral Aram captured, Prala in virtual ruins. How she wished she had taken King Amalyn's suggestion that she stay with him in Thelena. Her meeting with the king seemed so distant now, as if it had occurred during a different epoch. One where Shinri had been Yasna's ward, a simple girl doing another woman's errands. Shinri tensed her left hand, fingers gripping the knife hidden within her enveloping left sleeve. She was a woman now, by virtue of title or events, and had to decide upon her own actions. Perhaps she had made a mistake. Perhaps she should have tried to escape into the city, despite her reservations. Those opportunities were gone now, and events left her with only one certain determination. She would not let that man touch her again. The handmaidens finished their primpings. So soon? Shinri steeled herself, clenching her right hand to still its quiverings, and began to walk forward. She didn't move toward the door that connected her bedroom with that of the king, but left in the direction of the main hallway. Avan had sent specific instructions for her to be seen leaving her rooms and entering his. The knife was a strangely calming weight in her hand. She had stolen it off of the men's table during a feast, swiping it from the place before an empty seat as she passed. She knew her intent to kill Avan was, from one viewpoint, ridiculous. A simple dinner knife wielded by an untrained woman would hardly provide a serious threat for the man who had killed Tal Shekh Davar in a duel. However, she didn't really expect to succeed. Killing Avan was just one of the potential victories she could obtain this night. How would Avan respond to being threatened, perhaps even wounded, by his own wife? Would he kill her in retribution? If he did, he would suddenly find himself without a tangible link to House Davar. The two houses would be cast back to the same uncertainty they had faced that night so long ago, the night of the dueling competition. One man with an army, the other with a throne. Avan or her father would have to die, and either event would suit Shinri just fine. "And if he doesn't kill you?" Shinri thought with trepidation, as her ladies led her to the king's chamber door, which was opened by a steward. "What if he leaves you alive? and just decides to punish you. That was an option for which she was also prepared. She would not live in such a situation. Either she would escape, or she would remove herself from his power in another way. Avan's rooms were oddly simple. They were adorned as one would expect for one of his position, but none of the furniture or art seemed to display any measure of personal taste. They were indicative of position, without being showy, as if placed out of necessity rather than actual fondness. The only item that seemed even marginally original was a group of minstrels who sat at the far end of the sitting chamber, ready to act upon their master's call, even at the late hour. Shinri's handmaidens led her to the bedroom chamber doors, and the steward knocked, then opened the door for Shinri. He and the others remained behind as Shinri stepped into the room. Avan stood consulting the map that hung predominantly on one wall. He looked over as she entered, his eyes flat, and waved for her to shut the door. She did so with a quiet hand.
"Kenor," Avan said. "She is here."
Shinri frowned slightly as a different door opened and a man walked into the room. Of medium stature and perhaps in his sixth decade, the newcomer wore expensive but not lavish clothing, a fine and square-cut pair of trousers, a long white sen coat, and a loose blue sea-silk shirt.
"Come here, woman," Avan ordered.
Shinri did as commanded, gripping her knife uncertainly.
"This is Kenor Isavar," Avan said with a direct tone. "He is a physician. Soon your father and I will leave to deal with the remnants of the Aleph military. In a few weeks' time, you will inform your ladies that you believe yourself to be with child. Kenor has been assigned as palace physician. He will examine you and declare that you guessed correctly, then send a message to your father and myself, declaring the happy news. Do you understand?"
"Yes, my lord," Shinri said.
"Good," Avan said. "2 months later, assuming I have not returned, you will feign pains in your abdomen and send for Kenor. He will excuse all but his assistants from the room and attend to you. Afterward, he will sadly inform the palace that you have suffered a miscarriage. He will provide proof of the child's death, and you will substantiate anything he says. Do you understand?"
"Yes, my lord," she said, "in more ways than one."
"And why do you think I am doing this?" Avan asked.
The question caught her off guard.
"I am not sure, my lord," she said, lowering her eyes. "But I am just a simple woman. I will do as you command."
Avan snorted derisively.
"Do not play with me, child," he snapped. "You were trained by Yasna Kurlin, and you have the spark of intelligence in your eyes. You think you can fool a man who was himself forced to feign stupidity for the better part of 2 decades?
Shinri flushed, looking up.
"You fear that once my father has an heir, he will try to have you killed. However, if the Devar noblemen assume you aren't trying to make good on your promise of uniting the houses, they might not give you the support you need. So you have devised this plan to make it appear as if you have produced an heir, then lost it to chance."
"Very good," Avan said with a nod. "Now, take off your clothing and throw it in the corner."
Shinri froze, suddenly becoming tense.
"What?" she demanded.
"Your women and my servants think that I am bedding you right now," Avan said. "If you come out as pristine as when you entered, the facts will be obvious. So, go throw your clothing in the corner, mess up your hair and face paint. Then go sit on the bed and make the proper noises so those listening at the door will have gossip to spread. Kenor and I must confer."
Shinri balked, only for a moment, but it was too long for him. Suddenly, his hand was at her chin, gripping her face between cool fingers and twisting her head up so her eyes met his.
"You forget the lessons you learned on our wedding day so quickly," he whispered. "You will do as I command, child, both today and when it comes time to feign pregnancy. A clever woman can either be an asset or a grave hindrance, and I'm generally inclined to believe the latter. If I think, even for a moment, that you will betray me, then you will die. I would sooner kill you and your father than take my chances with the other Devar noblemen than have to worry whether or not you will obey me. Do you understand?"
Shinri gripped her knife. She could do it. She could raise her arm and plant it directly in his chest. "But he's going to leave you alone. He'll humiliate you again, true. But he'll have to leave you in the palace when he leaves. He can't take the chance of having you with him on the battlefield, pretending to be pregnant, when your father and the other Devar noblemen are close enough to send their own physicians. Survive this night, and you won't have to wait in tension and fright. He'll be gone, and you can escape."
Shinri lowered her eyes and nodded, shivering slightly.
"Good,"
Avan said, pointing toward the bed. Shinri followed his commands with as much dignity as she could gather, undoing her beautiful tala, then tossing it in a heap beside the bed. Avan watched the process, with obvious lust in his eyes, smiling with a leering twist of the lips. He was so cold most of the time, but in this one thing he obviously had difficulty masking his emotions. Or were there any masks? Was this perhaps the only emotion he actually felt? Could a man really be that broken? Shinri paused, glancing down at her white sea silk undershift. He hadn't said to remove it as well, but he could probably argue that it should be wrinkled. She could feel his eyes and his smile. The room felt quiet, despite the physician's calm voice, telling Avan of the drugs he would give Shinri to feign morning sickness and to stop her woman's issue. Avan watched. He was waiting. A test? "I need him to believe," Shinri thought. "Believe I'll do as he says, so he'll leave me here, alone." She removed her underclothing and wadded it up, dropping it in a pile. Then she sat on the bed, quickly pulling the bedding up and wrapping it around her. To the side, she saw Avan's eyes linger on her for a moment. Then the physician drew his attention, and the king began speaking to the man in a low voice. Had she passed some sort of test? Or had she simply encouraged his lusting? Shinri sat miserably, trying to wash away the feeling of his eyes upon her. Avan said something to his companion, speaking in a voice too quiet for Shinri to hear. The physician nodded in response, waving his hand to the side in a gesture of emphasis. As the hand flickered, Shinri thought she saw something beneath the cuff of his shirt, something coloring the back of his wrist. An Ilinra tattoo. "An Ilinra brother?" Shinri thought. Coincidence? Or is the king involved with them? Before, when gloating over his ability to see through her submissiveness, Avan had bragged of his ability to hide his intelligence for so long, and despite the reputation of idiocy he had founded, he had still managed to seize power. The event seemed near impossible, even for a brilliant man. If the Ilinra were backing him, however, it all suddenly became more plausible. Shinri focused, closing her eyes, trying to piece together what the king was saying to his companion.
"Noise!" Avan suddenly said in a louder voice. "Those outside expect to hear sounds from within, woman. I will not tell you again."
Sighing softly to herself, Shinri did as ordered, destroying any chance she had of eavesdropping on the conversation.
The knowledge that Avon had no intention of risking a child by her made Shinri's nights pass a little less tensely. Unfortunately, the days only grew worse. Avon had complete power over her, and he seemed to take amusement from expressing his control. He would order her to his rooms and have her sit naked on his bed while he worked on his maps and went over troop counts. He took her to social functions. Even in the midst of war preparations, the nobility felt the need for occasional mingling. At each of these meetings, Shinri was told to keep her eyes down, to remain at his side, and never speak without direct permission. Shinri saw discomfort and fear in the eyes of the other noblewomen. Avon employed no female scribes. He used monks in the open and Ilinra in private. Shinri heard little, since she was allowed minimal time for socializing, but her handmaidens reported some of the local gossip. The Vaiden women were concerned with their king's behavior, primarily his treatment of Shinri. They whispered that he was dissatisfied with the power women held over Kanaran politics, and that he intended his treatment of Shinri to become the model. The Vaiden were a people dependent on tradition. They would not be easy to change. However, the generals and noblemen watched Avon, and some of them displayed quiet approval. So it was that Shinri wasn't the only one who was relieved when Avon finally announced the army's departure. The declaration sent a wave of anxiety through the soldiers and their commanders, and for the first time, Shinri realized that, to many, the preparations might seem rushed. She had waited and prayed for Avon's departure, and each added day had seemed to drag like a winter high storm. However, 2 weeks was not that long a time to move an entire army in through the Oath Gate and to organize it in the city below. Avon seemed to be waiting for something. Even after the army began to move down the slopes to the base of the Mount of Ancestors, Shinri saw Avon in frustrated conference with his generals. He often glanced northward, his eyes uncharacteristically troubled. He looked toward Kolinar. Was he worried about Dalinar? Or was it something else? It was about that time that Shinri realized she hadn't seen the king's Shin henchmen in quite some time. With a feeling of dread, she realized she knew where he might have been sent. Avon had focused a great deal of energy on capturing Ral Aram in secret, but someone had escaped, Lady Yasna. Shinri's anxiety returned tenfold. The Shin were said to be warriors of almost supernatural ability. If anyone could track Lady Yasna's escape, it would be such a man. If Shinri's guess was correct, this man had already slain a half-tenset shard bearers, slaughtered children, and mercilessly advanced his master's domination of Vaidenar. If such a creature had been sent to hunt Yasna, Shinri wouldn't let herself worry about such things. She had more pertinent problems, such as her own escape. She still had no idea how she would manage it. Perhaps expecting her plans, Avon had set a special guard over the Oath Gates. 10 men and 1 shard-bearer stood guard at all times, and none of them made any move to join the departing army. Even with the withdrawal, the palace hallways were still well patrolled by soldiers, as were the ramps leading down to the city, not to mention the guards on the city walls themselves. Avon obviously felt it worth the cost of a few thousand troops to maintain a hold on Ral Aram, and he was probably right. Still, the preparations made Shinri's escape look less and less probable. However, she could do nothing before Avon's unyielding eyes. She needed to see him gone, sent to his unfortunate task with a surety of her submissiveness. So, when Avon finally declared that he himself was riding to battle, Shinri prepared herself in her finest dress and jewelry to bid him a properly triumphant farewell.
Avon's honor guard gathered on the palace plateau, along with several of the more important noblemen, including her father. When Ilhadal noticed her, his eyes didn't linger. He hadn't displayed indignation or even offense at Avon's treatment of her. She had expected neither. In fact, from the way her father had treated her when she was growing up, Shinri suspected that he highly approved of Avon's new etiquette. Avon made his appearance in a suit of brilliant white shard plate. Shinri didn't recognize it. He had probably had the armorers paint and adorn it especially for the occasion. The helm bore a fan-like crest that came to several points, and the shoulder plates were draped with golden sea silk. The breastplate was embossed in the form of a magnificent pal burst bearing the glyph pel, the symbol for intelligence, the opposite of idiot. Avon was accompanied by two shard bearers who had, until just recently, been common guards. They had been awarded the only two blades captured during the taking of Ral Arum. Avon had made a great display of them, but Shinri heard whispers that the same number of blades had been lost to Yasna's escaping group. Avon made no speech, nor did he acknowledge her, though she was certain he would have been angered had she not been there with her ladies, kneeling on silken pads beside the palace entrance. He waved for his white charger and was moving to climb into the saddle when an approaching figure caught his attention. Shinri glanced up. A messenger in false Aleth blue scrambled up the palace ramp, then made his way to Avon's side and voiced a message. Avon nodded once, waving for his entourage to halt their preparations. A few moments revealed the reason. A squad of horsemen, looking harried and fatigued in the afternoon light, clopped up the ramp. Shinri immediately recognized the man at their front. Avon's Shin assassin didn't have the same worn look as the rest of his group. The man rode with lithe dignity, slipping off his beast before it even came to a halt. He was to Avon's side like a pre-storm breeze, washing across the stones and bowing before his master. Shinri perked up. She was too far away to hear their exchange, but she had a good line of sight to Avon's face. Whatever the Shin man's message, it did not please the king. Shinri breathed in relief. Perhaps the man hadn't been sent after Yasna, but if he had, his mission had not found success. The Shin man stood, waving back toward his squad of men. The soldiers moved aside, revealing what Shinri had assumed to be pack horses. Settled atop them were two bodies. Several of the party's soldiers untied the bodies, and as one of them struggled lethargically, Shinri realized they were still alive. Captives, then, not corpses. One of the prisoners managed to stand on weak legs, and Shinri caught a shocking glimpse of the face. Even from a distance, she recognized Renarin Colin's muted features. The other one, tossed groggily to Avon's feet, proved to be the young peasant shard-bearer, Marin Colin. Probably not a shard-bearer anymore, Shinri thought ruefully, looking at the poor boy's condition. Her pity was immediately stamped out by another emotion, an irrational yet still potent anger. This was the man who had killed Tethryn. It was foolish, and she realized that. Marin Colin wasn't really responsible for Tethryn's death. Avon had somehow ordered her fiancé to his doom, and Marin had acted justly to try and protect his king. Yet, looking down at Marin, Shinri was ashamed to feel a kind of twisted satisfaction at his fate. The boy didn't deserve her loathing, but he also didn't deserve to bear Tethryn's shard blade. Avon didn't lose his frown at the presented gifts, but he did seem placated slightly, as he should have been. If he intended to capture Alethkar, he would have to face Dalinar Colin at some point. the Tyrant Bane's son and adopted ward would prove powerful bargaining gems, even against a man as noble and unyielding as Lord Dalinar. Avan waved for several of the soldiers to bear Renarin and Merin into the palace, while another man brought forth a shard blade and proffered it before his king. Tethryn's blade. Shinri felt a crawling chill as Avan reached out and accepted the blade, then shot a look in her direction. With an obvious motion, he summoned his own blade, then removed the opal and placed it in Tethryn's blade. The weapon immediately shifted, the strange awakened metal melting and reforming like molten steel until it was a copy of the king's former blade. Avan presented his own now discarded blade to another member of his honor guard, but Shinri wasn't paying attention. The thought of Avan's hand on Tethryn's blade. Better Merin bear it than him, she thought with a sick feeling. There was no reason for Avan to switch blades. Both would be identical when they bore his bonded opal. No reason at all, except to make one final display of his power over Shinri. He controlled her past, decided the fate of those she loved, and sought a grip on her very emotions. Shinri glanced to the side. The soldiers were dragging Merin and Renarin into the palace. Into the palace. To be kept in one of the secure cells in the west central wing. Avan knows that the palace is the most secure building in the city, the best place to keep a pair of important political prisoners. It was also the place closest to Shinri. Swallowing her guttural dislike of the boy who had taken Tethryn's life, Shinri forced herself to consider advantages and facts. Merin Kolin was rumored to be a brilliant duelist. He had saved the king's life twice. And while Renarin wasn't the finest warrior in Alethkar, he had been trained in the great monasteries of Kolinor. And now, these two men were being held just a few hallways away from Shinri's own rooms. Avan had just delivered her a means of escape.